studio connected by AT&T. Welcome to Between the Horns. I'm Miles Simmons. I am here with DeMarco Farr. It is Wednesday, October 4th, 2017, and the Rams are now 3-1 after they defeated the Dallas Cowboys 35-30 down in Jerry World AT&T Stadium. And you know what, DeMarco? It's a win that a lot of people are calling a statement win, and it's left a lot of pundits around the country asking, are the Rams for real? And declaring, yes, the Rams are for real. So, are the Rams for real?
You break with your right foot, right?
No.
When you're driving.
Yes,
you break with your
right God.
Foot.
I just forgot how to drive.
You just wrecked the car.
I just totally forgot how to drive. Well, I drive sticks, so I drive with both feet.
We're not in London yet, Miles.
I don't know. Yeah. Apparently, I don't know how to. No, even in London, they drive with their right foot, you know,
do
primarily.
They? Oh, anyway, pump the brakes on statement game because one's coming. Seattle is, that's your chance for a statement game. This is the real deal coming in, this Seattle defense. I bet they're watching that tape, you know, what the Rams did offensively versus Dallas's defense, and I would bet that Seattle's not impressed. I would bet they're more saying what Dallas didn't do or what they could have done to stop the Rams. So you're going to see the real deal test this week. But no, it's great for the Q rating. We talked about this. I texted you as soon as I saw it when that the latest power rankings came out from whatever website, and they had the Rams top 13. I said, this is what beating Dallas does for you. It makes people go,
Yeah.
So you've lost your ability to sneak up on people after winning in Dallas. But it was great, but the statement time is this Sunday in the Coliseum.
Well, you know, coaches and players always talk about breaking up the season into quarters. Mm-hmm. And in this particular quarter, the Rams went 3-1. They led the league with 35.5 points per game, which is a pretty remarkable turnaround considering how everything went last year. But now it's about, okay, how is this 3-1 going to be different from last year's 3-1, you know?
It's a transformative 3-1. I'll give you, for instance, Tremaine Johnson versus Dez Bryant. Remember back to the big fight that they had in Oxnard.
In Oxnard back in 2015.
That all started with those two guys.
It did.
And, I mean, I went into last Sunday thinking, okay, they're going to go at it again. It couldn't have been more professional out of Tremaine Johnson. And when you look at the film and if you watch the game, Tremaine actually gave it to Dez in a professional sort of way. So that is a change in a guy that I never thought would happen. I think that change has mirrored the teams. That's when you start talking about a coach changing a culture. When I see that, what I expect out of a guy, because that's what he's always been, then changes approach and he's all about winning. Yeah, this team has changed. So that's, I guess, if you really want to try to quantify what has happened, why this 3-1 feels different than last season, I would point to that. There's a belief. Watching those guys come in off the field after the game, they earned that win. That was a character win. They they dug down and fought back and made adjustments and got the victory, and they earned it. There was nothing fluky about it. So that was a great victory. It got everybody, I guess, looking in this direction as the Rams aren't so bad. But when you go back to that statement game, beat Seattle at home, that's a statement game.
I agree with you. And one of the things that I keep thinking about is talking to some of the guys in the locker room, Tremaine Johnson being one of them, after the game. And what they talk about is basically what you were saying. It's the culture shift. You know, there's a belief. And that especially goes for the offense. At this point right now, it seems like you don't let me try to figure out the best way to put this. You feel like at any time they can go down the field and score. At least that's what it's felt like over these first four games. Now, and I agree with you, the statement will be, can you do that against Seattle's defense? Because Seattle's defense is still the real deal.
Yeah, yeah. It's they're physical. You've seen Lord of the Rings, I hope, right?
Am I over your head
with Lord of the Rings?
You're not over my head.
I'm just saying.
Like, I am not a
Lord
of the Rings
guy. You didn't get the Scarface reference.
I didn't.
So if I say Seattle's defense attacks like orcs, does that resonate with you?
No, not really.
My God.
You know what?
Stormtroopers?
Yeah, they attack like stormtroopers.
They're relentless and they don't stop.
There we go.
And they swarm like jackals. And this will be the most physical group you've seen all year.
Yes.
And when I say you've seen, I mean Jared Goff. So,
right.
Yeah, I love the offensive mentality. I think they've they've taken on the image of their coach because you don't know who it's going to be on game day.
Mm-hmm.
That's going to get fed that day. But it all leads back to 16, delivering the football on time and accurately. So, but this defense, like I said, go ask Jacoby Brissett. I mean,
oh, goodness, yeah.
Oh my God. I mean, they just battered down that wall until they got to him. So, I mean, that's going to be, I wouldn't say intimidating, but that's going to get your attention watching them on tape. So it's going to be a little bit tougher to move the football down the field versus this defense.
Absolutely. But before we get to that, yeah. I do want to point this out because I tweeted this on Sunday night when I got home and about this 3-1 start and what is and is not different about it. But it's basically, there are some key stats that you can look to, and I was watching NFL Network, and they put up this graphic. I mean, obviously, wins and losses are the same at this point from 2016 and 2017, but your point differential, last year it was minus 13, this year it's plus 37. Your yardage difference, last year minus 442, this year plus 64. Average margin of victory, last year 5 points, this year 14.7 points.
Yeah.
Margin of defeat, 28 points. You lost 28-0 to San Francisco, and you lost by 7 points this year to Washington. So if there's reason to say, okay, what's different, those are the different things that are more quantifiable than just saying the culture has changed.
No doubt. You know what I mean? Last season, no disrespect to anybody that was here, working here, and that's not here, but last season it felt like you got away with robbing a few banks, and then you got caught. And it just, it went downhill.
Well, right, yeah.
Yeah, yes, I mean, yes, this year feels like you're actually building the bank and putting some plays and some schemes and some wins in the bank that's going to build towards December. So this one feels like what a winning football team should feel like.
Yes, and that's because, I mean, in today's NFL, you have a team that's scoring points.
Mm-hmm.
And last year, you know, you had a team that scored 10 or fewer points nine times. They averaged 14 points per game.
You can't defend that. In the true sense of defense, you can't defend that when you're not scoring.
Yes.
Yeah. You're going to break down. Yeah.
Right. When you don't score, I mean, we saw this countless times. Miami game last year. San Francisco game at home last year. There's a certain point where the dam is going to break.
Yeah.
If people are pounding on the door, as I have mixed metaphors, and your offense is not holding on to the ball, not getting first downs. So that right there, I think, helps you defensively when at the end of the game, you need to come up with a big play, and you're fresh because in this particular last game, you held the ball for over 10 minutes in the fourth quarter. That helps a lot.
Right. See, I'm guessing that's what's going to happen in New England at some point if they don't fix it defensively. Sometimes your best defense is your offense, which means Tom Brady stays out there longer. We need 12 or more play drives to keep our defense off the field. I think Wade Phillips and the defense, I like what I saw in the second half. Everyone playing together. Those tough, small, unreasonable commitments to winning, which means it may not be fun for me today. But as long as the group is getting off the field, then we're all winning. So I may not be able to make the wow plays, but I can make the routine, and we all make the wow play. So in the second half, I think we saw more of that. So as long as that continues into quarters 1 and 2 in the Coliseum this Sunday, you'll have a great chance of slowing down what Seattle's going to throw at you.
Right.
Or what anybody's going to throw at you.
Do you think that the defense has turned a corner there? I'm only allowing 6 points in the second half.
I think so. I mean, look, Dallas is going to hit plays. Teams are going to hit plays. And there were some mistakes out there. Sometimes Dallas just caught you in calls. They had a great call for what you called, and that's just the way it goes. But I'm starting to see the number of mental mistakes are dropping. There's still some open field tackling situations that you have to clean up because you're going to see those plays again, like the one Zeke scored on when he got in the flat that distance.
Yeah.
You're going to see those plays over and over again until you stop them. But not every team has a Zeke Elliott.
Most teams don't, as a matter of fact.
But you're going to have to sew up those plays to keep people from doing it.
Yes, and I think that's part of it. You talk about those open field tackling situations. That was kind of ugly there, you know? When you don't get Zeke down, that's what happens.
Yeah.
And it almost happened the same way on that last fourth down and 4th and 9, whatever it was, play at the end of the game where, you know, there's a missed tackle, but then John Johnson, rookie out of Boston College, does what he needs to do, get Zeke down a yard short. So we've seen some things get better there, but I agree. You have to, especially when you're playing man coverage like the Rams are doing, you have to be able to make the open field tackle.
And you're seeing the absence of LaMarcus Joyner.
He's your best defender,
in my opinion. That's why you put him at safety. Your best athlete, your best tackler is going to be at free safety. Mm-hmm. So you definitely missed his presence last week. You know, I wish I had a pocket-sized version of pros versus Joes. When I get an average Joe say, wow, Ogletree, I can make that tackle. Oh, I wish I could put that scenario on right there. Okay, here comes Zeke. Go ahead, make a tackle. Yeah, go ahead, right now. Yeah, you said you can make it. Go ahead.
Yeah, well, I mean, but that's the difference between when you say something and probably when I say something, right? I mean, like, I'm not saying, oh, like,
I wasn't talking about you.
I know, you were talking about me because I'm not saying I could make that tackle. Right. I know I can't. I'm not an idiot. I don't really want Zeke Elliott to just come up and run over me because guess what?
Yeah.
My life might end.
Can we put this on camera? Can I put you in pads?
We'll
get a practice squad running back. Come on.
And I have to tackle him?
We'll just stand there and see what happens.
Well, look, I mean, I'll give you a million bucks
if you tackle any professional running back.
I couldn't do it.
$1 million. All you got to do is bring him down.
I would try very hard.
Okay.
Would you tax me?
No, $1 million.
Straight up. No, I was really, really bad at defense when I was playing in high school. And, I mean, I like to tell people this. My senior year, everybody basically on defense, everybody on the team who was a senior, there were 18 of us, had defensive points. Like, you at least had one tackle, except for two players, the quarterback and me.
Why are you telling me this? You're supposed to lie. Say you had 100 or something. Oh, my God.
100 tackles? No.
What number were you?
I was 74. I was a left guard. Can you believe that, people? Looking at me. Listening to me on the smooth airwaves of the podcast. I don't know what the heck I'm doing right now. Anyway.
Sounds like you made that hit already.
What? Yeah. That what hit?
Yeah, you got a concussion.
No, I don't know. I think I'm fortunate that I never got a concussion.
I see why you didn't make a tackle.
I started off at like linebacker and I was playing like Sam linebacker in a 4-3 and then eventually they're like, why don't you go down to the D-line?
Okay.
And I played in some JV games on the defensive line.
And then you played left guard, offensive guard.
Yeah, I played, but I was an offensive player.
Is your quarterback still walking?
Yes,
okay,
he's still walking.
Checking.
I was good at offense. You know, I diagnose offensive things a lot easier than I do defensive things.
Yeah, but that's like quarterback analysis. I mean, you got to be physical. Never mind. Let's get
oh,
going.
Yeah, wow.
Never mind. I'm just saying.
I didn't say that.
I never said
no,
a word.
No, but you kind of implied
you
it.
You said you didn't make a tackle, but go ahead.
I didn't. All right. Yeah. Anyway, so the defense, we think they may have turned a corner. But two guys I want to talk about. Actually, one guy in particular. Aaron Donald has done a really nice job of coming back. He was Pro Football Focus, said that he was the best interior defensive lineman in week 4, which is great, and I probably agree. But
I've never seen a guy not be blocked once in a game.
He was dominating.
I take that
Zach
back.
Martin.
I've seen it before. I've seen it in college. I've seen it like in rare times in the pros where a guy is absolutely unblockable by what they had.
Yes.
Yeah. He dominates the game, but it doesn't show up in the stat column.
Mm-hmm.
He threw around Zach Martin.
He did. And Zach Martin is one of the best offensive linemen in the league. He is.
Zach Martin throws people around.
Yes.
Donald threw him around. I mean, he was absolutely terrifying to watch. Thank goodness, for Dallas's sake, that Dak Prescott is mobile.
Uh-huh.
If you're facing a statue, oh goodness gracious,
yeah
he's going to rip your head off. So, and the other thing I like is Michael Brockers has gone Conan.
He was going. He was the next name I was going.
He's
to bring
gone
up
Conan. Absolutely.
I don't think he has gotten enough credit for how well he's played this season. I really don't.
You know, when you think about when he was drafted, how old he was, and what year he's in now, he's playing his best football. He is in his prime, and he's playing to his size. He is playing like the biggest guy on the field.
Yeah.
And when he plays like that, it's intimidating for guys. So,
should be.
Yeah. Anybody in that has to defend or protect that center guard gap, that A gap, you're in peril because of how big he is. And then, oh, by the way, you can't slide because of Donald. So it's, wow. As long as those Cavs keep balling like that, like they did in the second half of Dallas, the defense will right itself sooner than later.
Well, they were moving Michael Brockers around a little bit, too. Mm-hmm. What did you sort of see from that in your examination?
I liked it. A 5 technique with Michael Brockers. When you have a guy that big that's lined up inside shoulder of a tackle or head up on the tackle, well, there go your outside runs to that side. Mm-hmm. And the way he's rolling off the football and how strong he is, and when he locks you out, you're going to be in the backfield. So think about a running back trying to take the ball off tackle to where Brockers is. Well, there's no corner. Now you're going to have to bubble that thing out, which gives your pursuit time to get there. So he's affecting plays to him. He's great in pursuit with the ball going away, just like Donald. He's had a great example of how to pursue to the football right next to him for a few years now. So they're playing at a high level together. When you start seeing dominant tackles, like two of them at the same time, usually you start talking about playoff football teams.
You hope so.
Yeah.
Yes. And the other guy that was starting in that was Tanzel Smart. Started at nose tackle. What did you see from his performance?
Yeah, Scrappy Doo.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's the
Scrappy Doo.
He's young. He's Scrappy Doo right now. But he's doing his job. He gets in there and he fights and he holds the point. And, you know, he wants his place at the table, man. He wants to be recognized with what's in front of them. You know, whenever you start to see young guys or rookies just play better than you expect early, well, they're trying to be like the guys ahead of them, like Donald, like Brockers. So they're bringing that young pup along, you know, perfectly. I think he's doing a great job.
What a great example. I need to call timeout, right? Yeah. I know. You're just not even going to react?
I'm just going to look at... Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. Anyway. He has two great examples of this Tanzel Smart ahead of him right there in Aaron Donald and in Michael Brockers. And again, he's a sixth-round pick out of Tulane. He's somebody that you probably would not necessarily expect would be getting in there and playing as much as he has. But something I remember talking to him about during training camp was what Bill Johnson had told him, which is, look, it doesn't matter how you got here, you're here. Mm-hmm. And if you're here, you're here for a reason, and you're going to play. And I think he's really taken that attitude to heart, and it's like he has very high expectations for himself, and he's going to go out there and try to perform to them. And I think that's great for a rookie.
And when you, I mean, this is something that you probably wouldn't want to tell him to his face, but when Brockers is out on a 5 and Donald is out on a 3, he's over the nose. You're actually the most important player on the defense at that time. Hmm. If you don't hold that point, every inch that you give is an inch that they get.
Yes.
So if you get knocked off the football, there's going to be running lanes everywhere. Mm-hmm. If you can master that spot and dominate that spot, they pay nose tackles really, really well.
They do.
In 3-4 defenses. So, yeah, I mean, like you said, if you're here, you're here for a reason. He's strong. He's quick. He works at it. He cares. He's passionate. And he's played better than expected.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So before we get back to the offense, I do want to talk about the pass rush for the Rams, because right now they're tied at third in sacks with 12. There's a bunch of teams that have 12 sacks, though. And they're number 4 in sacks per pass attempts at 9.92%, rather. They're of dropbacks, they're getting a sack. God, I'm like having a rough time here.
It's okay.
Goodness.
Take a timeout.
I mean, like, am I a professional or what?
Yes, that's all right. We can do it.
They're getting, they're 4th in sacks per attempt at nearly 10%. That's probably what I should have said in the first place.
But I'm going to give you a wristband.
Of what?
Straight Vince Young style.
What is that? Yeah. Oh, of the plays?
Yeah. Blue 2. Got it.
And then you just read off there?
Right.
But I have glasses, so maybe I can't even see my wrist. I don't know what's going on today.
Anyway.
I'll try to clean it up the rest of the
no
way.
No problem. The pass rush.
I need some second half adjustments.
Yeah.
The pass rush, though, to me, it seems like a lot of times it's not quite getting there as quick as you might like to. Mm-hmm. And I think part of that is, I don't know, you see it when guys are going down the field, right? When Dak Prescott has enough time to take a shot down the field to Dez Bryant on the first play of the game, you might be looking for run in that situation because of the running back who is there. But also, if quarterbacks are going to have that much time, you're going to get eaten up.
Well, and remember, some of these guys, especially last week, Dak Prescott, it's a dual threat. He's a running quarterback.
Yes.
So you have
to see another one.
You have to rush, and you have to rush under control. You've heard this before. Light your hair on fire and go, right?
Yes.
Get after the quarterback. Well, you can't necessarily do that with a Dak Prescott or a Russell Wilson because they'll pull the ball down and make you pay. Yeah. So you have to rush under control, and that gives that offensive lineman a little extra. I'll give you another on the other side. Andrew Whitworth, what he's doing right now. With Jared Goff.
Unbelievable.
Who's athletic, but doesn't run.
Right.
So you've got to be letter perfect. The guy's not just coming to you. When you're facing a guy like Russell Wilson or Dak Prescott, you have to rush closer to the guy that's on you. Because if he does start to run, you're going to have to squeeze those lanes.
Right.
If you give him a wide lane, you're not going to get him. So it makes it a little bit tougher to rush the passer. Around the edge, Robert Quinn, I think, has been winning. He had Tyron Smith out there.
Yeah.
A guy who gets paid a lot of money.
One of the best.
It was a great. It was a great battle. On the other side, when you gave me those stats, I was attaching names, and I was thinking some of those names that we usually call out probably are on the lower side, and guys like Matt Longacre are probably on the higher side right
yes.
now.
Yes, no, they yeah. are. The two leaders of the... Again, man, what's going on?
I have no idea.
I don't know. Maybe I need a drink of water.
Smelling salts?
I guess.
Okay.
I need to wake the bleep up.
He's been balling, though.
Yes.
He has.
Matt Longacre and Connor Barwin are leading the team right now with 2 sacks each.
Yeah, so, he's been balling. He's earned more reps. So you'd like it to where you'd see Quinn, Brockers, Donald, the guys you're actually starting.
Sure.
Barwin to get to the quarterback. But as long as there's consistent pressure without having to compromise the defense by sending pressure, mm-hmm. I think you're doing just fine.
I think you are too. So let's turn it back to the guys who were scoring points on Sunday, and that's two guys that were named Player of the Week in the NFC, Todd Gurley, Offensive Player of the Week, Greg Zuerlein, Special Teams Player of the Week.
We can talk about the kicker.
Yeah.
Let's talk.
DeMarco's been like chomping at the bit to talk about the
kicker. He's the MVP of the game.
Listen,
what's 3 times 7?
21.
How many points did you score on Sunday?
35.
Okay, who outscored the kicker?
Who outscored?
No one. Greg Zuerlein is your guy. He's the MVP.
He had 23 points total in that game.
Yes.
I mean, field goals that were – he didn't have any attempts over 50 yards, which I think credit the offense for that, because you got in good, solid scoring position. We all know Greg has a great leg. That's why they call him Greg the Leg. But now, he's been dubbed Mr. Automatic.
I mean,
McVay was talking about that after the game. Jared Goff said he's absolute nails, and – Goff was talking about how he wants to be very, very careful when he's with the ball down in the red zone, because he knows, look, you have points. So in some ways, I'm not saying that he wants to be conservative, but I'm saying that when you know you have points, if you've got a kicker, you don't want to give points away.
You don't have to press.
Right.
Yeah, if you get good field position, you're almost guaranteed to have 3 points. That's
right.
Great to have in your back pocket. Yeah. First time kicking off turf all year and nailed it. I mean, 7 for 7, and they were 7 no-doubters.
Mm-hmm.
More than enough distance. I mean, right down the middle. So what a great weapon to have. I mean, Johnny Hecker might be the best weapon in football, but on this team, it may be Greg Zuerlein. Once you cross
There's
the 50,
argument.
He's got the leg. You know, yes. He's got the leg. But once you cross the 50, like you said, if you're in scoring territory, the least you're going to come away with is 3 points.
Right.
And he kept you afloat, kept you in the game in Dallas, and eventually you sewed it up and you got the lead and won the game, all because of your kicker. So he would be my MVP. He would for that football game.
For that football game?
Yeah.
I mean, when you hit 7 field goals and you do, and you account for 23 points, that's a pretty special day. Set a franchise record in a single game for number of field goals.
Absolutely. Tremendous. And, I'm so glad we got away from this threatening the record, the distance record.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I always thought that's like a home run derby.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I
mean,
who cares?
It ruins guys or changes them for the rest of the year. So I would love it if all of his field goals for the rest of the year were for 50 and under. And he nails every single one of them.
Yeah. Well, and we were sort of talking about this before we went on the air. Look, the great thing about Greg Zuerlein is that he's kind of turned things around, especially from 2 years ago, where he only hit 66% of his field goals. And there was talk of there being competition for him last year and da-da-da. And then he goes out, has a great year last year, and he has now made 18 consecutive field goals dating back to 2016. So credit to him.
You keep nailing stuff like this. When they bring in a kicker in camp, that's not competition. That's just rest for you.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's like when they bring in a punter for Johnny Hecker.
That's just
it's
rest.
Some rest.
Yes.
get you some rest. But let's turn it, though, to the offensive player of the week and the offensive player of the month for September. And, if not for Kareem Hunt, then probably someone that we'd be talking about as the MVP of the first quarter of the season. And that's Todd Gurley, because he's been outstanding.
And the funny thing is, I think he could have been better. I think there's still room to get better with Todd Gurley in the open field.
Mm-hmm.
But how he's being used, how Jared Goff sees him in the open field, how the offensive line, my goodness, Roger Saffold, has an edge. Jamon Brown has an edge. Sullivan. They all played with an edge.
Yeah.
They wore out, absolutely wore out that Dallas Cowboy defensive line.
I think the best example...
They didn't want any more.
The best example of that is, look, Todd Gurley's numbers rushing the ball, 23 carries, 121 yards, average 5.3. Longest run of the day was 17 yards.
Yeah. They just
so that means you're just bludgeoning them again and again. You saw it on the last offensive drive that the Rams had. You get a run for 11 yards, and then you get a run for 12 yards. It's just you are wearing those guys out.
Those three guys really had a great game. I mean, the offensive line as a whole had a great game, obviously.
It's a unit right now that I think is playing very, very well together.
You're going to be tested this Sunday.
Yes.
This is by far your best defense, defensive line, most active group you're going to see to date. But against Dallas, if you had a third place MVP, it might be them. Or I might even replace Todd Gurley as a second place with those guys, with the way they blocked. I mean, they were letting Dallas know, like finishing people, it's not safe in here for you. It's more than just about football at this point. So, and when you get a defensive line worried about you, and then the running back, that running back's going to have a big day. And that's what Todd Gurley did.
I mean, well, as a former defensive lineman, when you're in that situation, what goes through your mind there?
It's not safe out here. this is more than football at this point. Yeah, it becomes about survival. And then you have to worry about doing your job as well. But, you know, with a back like Todd Gurley, if you give him just, you know, an iota of hesitation, he's going to be by you. So, and you have to give the offensive line all the credit in the world. I mean, they really took it to Dallas.
Have you been surprised at the way Todd Gurley has been able to catch the ball too, and been such a weapon?
Yeah, I've never seen it. I didn't see it at Georgia.
Yeah. I mean, they're not really known for their passing prowess.
Maybe he knew he could do this the whole time, but. Or it could have been that Sean McVay convinced him that, hey, there's more ways to get you the football than just handing it to you. Mm-hmm. And let me show you.
Yeah.
And then, boom, he starts to have success. That happens with players, too.
Mm-hmm.
Something is suggested. You don't think you can do it. And then it happens and you become better and it just snowballs. So I think Todd is reaching his prime. I think he's playing his best football to date.
No question.
Yeah, since he started. So and there's still room to grow for him.
Yeah, but it goes back to what I was thinking about, the chunk yardage, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, when we saw a lot of those 100-yard performances back in 2015, a lot of them were kind of predicated on, okay, he gets a big run of 40-plus yards down the field. And it's not that Todd Gurley doesn't have the capability of doing that. I think, obviously, he still does. But sometimes, to me, it's almost more effective if you are running the ball like that and you don't get a run over 20 yards because it just means that you're pounding away at the defense consistently. There's no relenting. You can't do anything to stop it. And I think that kind of builds something from a mental standpoint for the offense too.
I think that's his approach to the game. The big runs are going to happen. Just don't reach for them, you know?
Yes.
They're going to happen. He's a grinder. And eventually, the great Marshawn Lynch, that great soundbite, if I keep running through your face over and over and over and over and over, eventually you're not going to like it. Eventually you're going to quit.
Do you think there's a larger metaphor there?
Yeah, well, that's a back like Todd. He just keeps pounding and pounding. Eventually those big runs happen.
Yeah.
No shock, they happen late in games.
Mm-hmm.
When you have a lead.
And that's closing time. And that's the great thing about Todd Gurley is that when you need that closer, he can be that for you.
Yes. And then as a defense, you also have to contend with they slipped him out on a screen, and now I got to go pursue.
Yes.
Yeah.
And they get him out there on that wheel route down the seam, and Jared Goff hits him, boom, he's going down the field.
He can catch too. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
What did you think of that play design?
Loved it. It's new NFL. A lot of teams are using it. It's a big copycat league. You know this,
oh,
right?
Oh, yes. Yeah.
I think, didn't Dallas hit the Rams with one on a Zeke touchdown? Another pick route?
Sort of, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of rubs. There's a lot of picks. That's why it's a real point of emphasis this year about calling that offensive pass interference on those rub routes if that ball doesn't come out quickly. So
yes,
it's the new NFL.
Well, you've got to get that block within a yard. But the funny thing about that 53-yard touchdown, and people kept pointing this out on Twitter, it was similar to what Kansas City did against New England in week one, where Kareem Hunt goes down the field. The two differences that I noticed in that, watching that play on All 22, and then we did that the Gurley play for All 22 on therams.com. If you haven't checked that out, you can go do that. But there was a little bit more rhythm and timing to the Rams play than there was to Kansas City's play, because Alex Smith had to hold the ball, and then boom, he throws it down the field. Whereas with the Rams, it was, okay, Jared Goff hits that back foot after the play fake to Tavon Austin, and ball's got to come out because that's where the lapse in coverage is. So
yeah.
I think it was a really nice job of executing that play.
And they set it up perfectly.
Yes,
I mean,
did.
They got the look that they wanted, and they called the play on time, and they hit it. So it's going to work. Just going back to Seattle, that little tight end play where you do a little fake half roll and the tight end slips out, and Lance Kendricks made a living on it. Remember that play? They just covered it. It's that play is impossible to see.
Yeah.
And they covered it with two guys.
Right.
They're going to be ready for everything.
They are.
It's going to be tougher.
It's going to be a lot tougher.
Yeah.
Because that's Seattle's defense.
Yes.
Though.
They're dialed in with everything. It's a defensive-minded coach in Pete Carroll.
Right.
With a team that's actually winning. So his job is to dismantle offenses. That's how Seattle's going to win. It's always going to be close.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And especially when you have division rivals. But with Todd Gurley, I look at his workload right now. He's leading the league with 106 touches.
Keep giving him the ball.
Weeks.
He's fine.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't even want to hear it.
You answered the question before I could
even
ask it.
Stop. He's young. He's fine. Give him the rock.
I agree with you.
Yes.
I mean, the workload, though, it's something that you're probably going to continue to talk
about.
We'll
buy him a cryo chamber, whatever they're putting themselves in the off season.
LeBron James?
Yeah, we'll freeze you in the off season. But right now, it's work time.
Off season.
Yes.
But with a back like that, I think the more touches he gets, the better he's going to be, right?
Yes.
Isn't that sort of the point?
Absolutely.
Like, you know, you drafted him number 10 overall for a reason.
But at some point, I mean, I love Tavon as the backup tailback. I mean,
there's
going to have to be the emergence of someone else.
It could be Tavon. It could be Lance Dunbar.
Yeah.
If and when he gets off PUP in a couple of weeks. So that's something to think about.
I mean, anytime you can spell Todd Gurley with a few attempts, and dare I say that don't matter, or just when you can squeeze in to get him a little more rest.
Well, there is.
Then yes.
Right. There was that play, and it was the play before the 53-yard touchdown where Malcolm Brown got a screen and it goes for 14 yards.
That's a perfect example of what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
Right.
I mean, you probably, if you're in the game at that point, you probably don't think Malcolm Brown is going to get the ball because Todd Gurley was just doing stuff. Todd Gurley go gets a breather, and you're like, oh, okay, well, we got to defend something else on this play. And then, boom, you hit him with the screen.
Yeah.
I think that's really good play
call. He's fine. But I don't want to hear about Todd and overuse and what. No. The guy is your bell cow. Give him the ball.
Well, only he leads the league right now with 7 touchdowns, and he has 596 yards from scrimmage. So
okay. I'll tell you when you know he's tired. When he stops, like, jumping grown men. Yeah, when he stops jumping over people, maybe you can say he's tired.
That's
but,
so funny.
Yeah, I think he's fine now.
You know, when he did that, that hurdle, at least the hurdle attempt, and then the helmet goes into the groin, and like everybody in the press box was like, ooh.
Cause, except him.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know.
Because it didn't actually hit him where it hurts.
He was running right at me, and I swear his foot, I'm 6 feet, 6'1". His foot was in my face. That's how high up he was, right?
Golly, that is such amazing athleticism.
That was like Jackie Chan carrying the football.
You talk about things I can't do. I can't do that, right?
No. Well, I think you could.
How?
If you were scared to death. If you were scared to death or something, maybe.
Maybe. If Aaron Donald is running at me and I need to, like, leap over or something.
I think he's got more to show. I think there's more in Todd Gurley. He's got more to show us this season. So I wouldn't worry about touches or being tired yet.
I wouldn't either. But one thing you did bring up about the rub routes and things like that, I noticed this on the Cooper Kupp touchdown. Last week we talked about how Cooper Kupp sort of set that thing up for Sammy Watkins when they're on the 1 yard line. You know, he blocks the guy within a yard of the line of scrimmage. Sammy Watkins runs a slant, Goff delivers the ball, it's a touchdown. On this play, after the Robert Woods touchdown that was not, and I still don't really know why that was not a catch. We can talk about that in a bit. But you get Sammy Watkins, on the line of scrimmage, and you've got these route combinations with the two of those guys, with Watkins and Kupp. And Watkins is this time the one who's going to make a little block within a yard of the line of scrimmage, then run out for his route. That gives enough separation for Cooper Kupp to get into the left sort of flat, curl area. Then he catches the ball, runs it in for a touchdown. I like that you've got these guys kind of, all right, I'll scratch your back one week, you scratch mine the next. Isn't that? I like that as this offense
And that's
goes.
Probably the first time that they have seen it. The corners have seen that sort of route combo. But it's incumbent upon Jared Goff not to waste that rep, because once they've seen it, I mean, I wouldn't say it's no good, but now they can talk about it, game plan for it, defend it a little bit better. But the first time it hits, it's going to be wide open, and you've got to score, and that's what they did. So it's just like basketball, pick and roll basketball. I mean, there's a thousand ways to make you pay off a pick and roll, but the first thing is that pick and roll. So when you've got a bigger receiver or Sammy Watkins and Cooper Kupp stacked in right behind, that rub route is always going to be a problem. It's tough to defend. Mm-hmm. And then they can do, you know, eight different variations off it. So, but when you do come up with something they haven't seen and it's open, Goff has got to get the ball there. You've got to get good protection, get the ball there, and boom, you got to score with it. And
so,
they did.
So far he's been doing that, though.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, there's a lot going on in this offense. I said it's like a space shuttle. There's a million and one moving parts.
Space shuttle?
Yeah, there's a million and one moving parts to this offense.
Yeah.
There's a lot going on, and the guy that needs to know everything about it is Jared Goff. And so far, he's been perfect with it. Yeah. He hasn't missed.
No, he hasn't.
And credit to Sean McVay and the coaching staff for having him ready to play.
One thing that stood out to me earlier this week is when Sean McVay was talking about himself in a self-critical way. And I said talking about himself, and that's not quite right, because he was asked about, you know, different play calls or things that stood out on film, and what he started talking about was basically that he wasn't happy with the way that things went for him at the end of the game, basically when he called that Todd Gurley was a draw, inside zone, whatever you want to call it, on third and four, and he basically was saying, you know, that that's something that has to be better. And then he also talked about getting a little pass happy down in the red zone when they're running three straight pass plays. And it just continues to stand out to me how self-critical he is and how forthcoming he is about being self-critical when he's talking to the media in these press conferences.
And how smart he is. I mean, you know, some of that is coach speak, but you don't know which part he's trying to
cover. Right, yes. Yeah, yeah. No, I get what you're saying.
Yeah, yeah. He's very smart with that. And so far he's been very, very good at calling the game. It's not always going to work. It's not always going to, you know, score seven.
Right.
But the offense is building towards being one of those teams that, you know, once you stop making mistakes that shoot yourself in the foot and you start having the emergence of special players. We're already seeing it in Todd.
Yeah.
Now imagine if Todd and Sammy are both going berserk at the same time.
It's very hard to defend.
It makes you the Atlanta Falcons, is
it
what
does.
I'm saying.
It
so
does.
You're building towards that. So as long as you have a good foundation, and I think they did that through training camp and preseason, you can start to build off your offense. And by November, December, if you're lucky, everybody stays healthy, you're going to be there with the best offenses in the National Football League.
Right, and that's the thing. Okay, McVay was talking about, okay, it's great for Greg Zuerlein to get 23 points and, you know, seven field goals and all that, but the other thing he said is, I'd like to see him kick a few less field goals and more extra points.
Right.
Because when you get down into those territories, especially when you get two possessions, one off of a kick return and then the other off of Mark Barron's great interception that start at the 35 or in, you want to get touchdowns out of those drives instead of two field goals. You
right.
Know?
I think, you know, now that Sammy Watkins is, I think you're going to start to see more out of him. I would, if I were a betting man, and I'm not, I would bet that Sammy Watkins, just like Todd Gurley has been the MVP of the first quarter, I would bet Sammy Watkins takes over this second quarter.
You think so?
I would bet. Because of who you're about to face and where you're playing him. And how this offense is progressing. And Todd Gurley's emergence is going to draw a lot of attention.
Absolutely.
Which is going to give you man coverage. And look, the guy's made a living beating man coverage.
He has.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's one thing that people have actually been talking to me a lot about on Twitter the last couple of days. Like, what's up with Sammy Watkins? And somebody asked me this earlier today, and, you know, I tweeted it. I was like, well, I find this to be a weird take when, like, you're saying, what's up with Sammy Watkins? Like, why isn't Sammy Watkins more involved when this offense is scoring 35.5 points a game, right? You know?
Yeah.
So, to me,
it's a fair question.
Do you really think so?
It's a fair question. I mean, because, I mean, Sammy hasn't dominated the game yet. He's talking about.
Well, I think he dominated the San Francisco game. I think he and Woods both dominated the San Francisco game.
Fair. I mean, light it up. Big plays. Take the top off defense type stuff.
Okay.
Yeah. Antonio Brown, Julio Jones type plays.
Sure. Okay. And that's fair, too.
That type of stuff. That's what he means. We haven't seen that guy yet. It's coming. Guaranteed it's coming.
Of course it's coming.
It's coming. Right. So it's not what's up with Sammy. It's just, look, the offense is functioning. They're building, and it's not his turn. Eventually, it's going to be.
Yes. Yeah. And I think that's what it is. It's a matchup-based offense, and certain guys are going to have their turn every week, right? It was Robert and Sammy's turn mm-hmm. against San Francisco. This last game, it was Todd, and it was basically a lot of Todd Gurley. When you get 215 yards from scrimmage, mm-hmm. that's what that means. You got Cooper Kupp doing some good things with matchups there. So, to me, it's more, all right, who is the defense trying to take away? How do you counter that? And if you have this amount of weapons that the Rams appear to have right now, that's going to allow you to continue to put up points like they have.
Absolutely. Whatever you can do, the Rams have an answer, I think is what you're saying.
Yes, exactly.
Now, but eventually,
and I think that's more important than saying, okay, why isn't Sammy have numbers?
But take it a step beyond, because as Goff gets better, it's not going to matter what you have.
True, yes.
Yeah,
okay,
I mean, the group I ran with, the mm-hmm. greatest show, it was every week was their day.
Yeah.
They're all getting it no matter what you had. Yeah. So eventually, as your quarterback becomes, as he gets better, so does the offense. But, I mean, I think it's not a criticism, it's just a fair question. What is up with Sammy? I thought I'd see more. I thought he'd be more explosive at this point. But there's nothing to complain about when you're scoring this many points.
Right.
Yeah.
And that's, I guess, where it like is off to me.
Right.
Because if you're the top scoring team in the league, then what more do you want right now? I mean, nobody else is scoring 35 points a game.
No
right?
doubt.
Especially as a team that, again, scored 10 points or fewer 9 times last year. So I guess, I don't know if my attitude is like, well, what more do you want?
Okay.
But I understand.
Do you have the numbers in front of you? Because I do not.
From numbers of what?
The receiving numbers.
From this team, I can pull them up right.
Please
quick.
Do, real yeah. quick, because I think this is what he was talking about. Come on, hurry up.
Vamp on something.
We got 24 seconds. Come on.
We don't have 24 seconds.
Come on,
seconds.
This is hurry up offense.
Oh my gosh.
Get me lined up.
I can't hear.
Come on,
my headphones.
I don't care. Get me lined up.
My helmet
receiving
signal
numbers.
Is off. Just like Jared Goff and Sean McVay last
Okay, who's
year,
leading
last
in receptions?
Week. Right now, who's leading in receptions?
Reception.
It's Todd Gurley right now.
Okay.
20 for 234.
I bet people thought it would be Sammy Watkins. Okay, who's leading in yards?
Who's leading in yards? Todd Gurley.
I bet people thought it would be Sammy Watkins. Who's leading in touchdown receptions?
Todd Gurley.
I bet people thought it would be Sammy Watkins. That's why it's an okay question to ask, what's up with Sammy?
But you know what? But you're answering the question with, what's up with Sammy? Well, Todd Gurley right now is getting the lion's share of the offense.
There's your answer.
Okay, so then like why?
it's
why
a fair question. What's up with Sammy? Well, Todd Gurley is seeing a lot of action right now.
Yeah.
That's your answer. It's nothing to get all in a twist over.
I mean, I'm not really in a twist.
This
is me on a normal day.
Right.
Aren't I like this on a normal day, Matt?
100%
right.
All the time.
Who's leading in targets?
Todd Gurley with 25.
Who's second?
Who is second?
Where,
Robert Woods with 22.
Where is Sammy Watkins on the target list?
He is fourth right now with 16.
Now, see, if I was just walking off the street and I saw that, I would ask Miles, who's around the team, hey, what's up with Sammy Watkins? See what I mean?
So now you're making me look like an unreasonable idiot.
No, I'm just saying it's a fair question to ask. It's not a knock.
But the way it's been phrased to me sounds more like a knock than it does, well, wait a minute, you know, like, is what's going on here?
I think it's just your filter, man.
You think it's my filter?
I think
filter?
It's the way you heard it. Yeah.
I mean, I read it because it's a tweet.
Okay, I think it's just the way you read it.
I mean, that's probably
that's
true.
Right.
I have a tendency to make mountains
out of molehills.
Buy a
punching bag, it helps.
I really need to, I need to get into boxing. If somebody is listening to this.
Mixed martial arts is yours.
Really? You think mixed martial arts?
You need it so bad.
Really?
Yeah.
I don't know about kicking stuff. But I'm gonna be shameless right now. If somebody, like, if you're listening to this and you know of, like, good boxing thing, gyms,
you need
or whatever,
you need
in the
mixed
valley,
martial arts. Yeah, or, you need something that doesn't stop when it hits the ground.
But I don't want to, like, box people. I just kind of want to, like, you know, just get in the gym and
trust
just
me,
work out or
come
whatever.
Come with me. I'll take you to a Brazilian jiu-jitsu.
I know karate.
No, that,
I know
see. Let's not walk in there with that, okay? They'll beat us up. Yeah. It's
more,
a fair question.
More
it's
glory.
A,
it
yeah,
is a fair
it's
question.
A fair question. Yeah.
More glory days stories for me before we move on to something that actually
okay.
has to do with football. I was actually a black belt in Taekwondo as a child.
See, when he says I was a black belt, did you take this at a mall store?
It was not a mall store.
Okay.
No, it was Master Kwan.
How long did it take you to receive a black belt from Master Kwan, from start to black belt day?
Probably second to fifth grade.
Second to fifth grade.
The
so
summer before
3 years?
Grade-ish. Yeah.
How much did you pay for that?
I have to ask my mom. I don't know.
You paid for a nice belt.
Well, you know why I stopped? I broke my arm right when it was fifth grade, and it was the day after my birthday. I'd gotten a new
bike.
How'd
you break your arm?
I'd gotten a new bike. And
if you said I got it in a fight, I would have laughed.
Oh, okay. God. Please, me in a fight, really?
Okay.
Well, although
you're
a black
belt.
I would win if I got in a fight.
Okay.
A lot of pent-up aggression. So I got this new bike, and on my old bike, I would always, you know, go really, really fast down the street, and the brakes weren't that good on the bike, so I would just squeeze both the front and back brake, and it would, like, skid on the sidewalk, and it would be really fun, and then I'd stop right in front of my house. So I didn't really understand the concept of how bikes work, which is, you know, if you hit the front brake really hard, like, physics is going to flip you over if the brakes are good.
Okay.
So I'm rolling down the street. I got my new bike. I'm like, I just turned 10 or 11 or whatever age I was, and I'm having a great time. And then I squeeze the brakes to stop and skid right in front of the house, and boom, go over the handlebars. And
yeah.
I broke my left arm. Like, it was bad. Like, and I'm like,
you're about ready to cry now.
No.
My God.
It was funny because I'm like laying there on the sidewalk, and my mom might hate that I'm telling the story, but she's inside watching Glitter. And like, I took off my watch.
She's allowed.
I know.
Yeah.
But a neighbor eventually comes by and is like, are you okay? And I was like, not really. And so he knocked on the door and got my mom, and we went to the hospital. But I don't know why I was just laying there thinking I'm going to be fine. You know, like it is what it is.
I have one question.
Okay.
Have you seen Glitter?
No.
Okay, thank God. Okay.
That's the Mariah Carey movie, right?
I have no idea.
I'm pretty sure it's a Mariah Carey movie that she made. Anyway,
I don't need to know. I don't need to know. Okay.
Doing. Matt, look up if Glitter is a Mariah Carey movie.
I'm not going to look up Glitter.com.
Can we get back to football,
don't
please?
Do Glitter.com.
Seattle's coming this week.
Just
come
search
on.
Glitter. Yes. Seattle is coming this week, and that actually, to me, is going to be a really, really big test for this Rams team, especially defensively, because if you look at Russell Wilson, and I know people are talking about the line and whatnot, he can go bombs away, and if they do that, that's going
to
be a problem.
And I think that's been to their detriment. He has gone bombs away. It's his football team now. He is playing like he's not looking over his shoulder ever again. They're going to live and die on his arm, and he knows that. So he's very dynamic in the pocket and at times can get careless with the football. That's why he's turned it over. But a failed left tackle, Luke Jokel, playing guard. Mm-hmm. I mean, that should make Aaron Donald smile.
Yeah.
And I have to give props to the Indianapolis defense, especially those two tackles, because I know what it feels like to have your work overlooked because your team is bad. Those guys are good.
Mm-hmm.
They should be on everybody's Pro Bowl list. They gave it to the Rams in week one, and they absolutely manhandled Seattle's offensive line last week. Guys were getting thrown around. Britt was getting thrown around. So I think the Rams have the advantage there with Donald and Brockers.
Sure.
But remember this. Russell Wilson knows what's up. He knows that he's going to face a lot of pressure, especially from the interior. So he's going to be at his tricky best. Damn near annoying the way he plays. And, you know, he's got that baseball background, right?
Yeah.
So when he hits a big play, I mean, scramble, throws one down the field. When he hits a big play, he has a home run glide to him. Like his body language, he's like above the clouds. But also when you trap him, when he has to cut back to the middle of the field, when he scrambles and doesn't have a safe place to, you know, to hit, and he's going to take a hit, his body language will change. Everything about him changes. So you have to force him back to the middle. Even if he runs, he's going to get out. But make sure you're able to tag him and hit him and make him pay for it, because it does change him. But he's going to be very, very elusive this weekend. It's going to be tough to catch him.
I think it's going to be tough to catch him because of the way he has been able just to make plays with his feet, and the way that he's got this partnership with Doug Baldwin. I think that has gone extremely well.
Doug Baldwin is a rock in your shoe.
Yeah,
he's a problem.
That's a really good way
to put
it.
He's a problem every step of the way. Mm-hmm. The only way to rid yourself of Doug Baldwin is to take the shoe off and throw it away, which means, but he's always going to be there. He's a problem. So is Jimmy Graham.
Uh-huh.
Jimmy Graham, and this is funny, and we'll probably get killed for this, but he reminds me of Jerry Rice when I see him run routes.
Whoa.
He glides. He just absolutely glides into position.
Interesting.
Yeah, the body types don't match, the positions don't match, mm-hmm. but just the way they run routes, he glides into everything, and he always seems to be open.
Well, I'll say this. I mean, watching that game with Indianapolis and Seattle from last week, Graham had 4 catches for 61 yards. Just seems like he and Russell Wilson are finally getting on that same page that kind of haven't been over the last couple of years.
And he was forcing the ball to Jimmy Graham, and they turned it over a few times, or once. He tried to get the ball to Jimmy Graham, and he underthrew it, and it was picked. Great play. But, yeah, that's the matchup you want to take advantage of. You've got a giraffe sprinting through the middle of the field. Yeah, I mean, just throw it up higher, then the defender can get it, and Graham will catch it. So pressure stops that.
Yeah.
Getting Russell off his spot, disrupting the timing of the play. Can control Jimmy Graham, because, look, on a scramble play, Doug Baldwin's going to hurt you.
Mm-hmm.
On a scramble play, I'm not sure how much Jimmy Graham can hurt you.
That's fair.
But
yeah.
But in the pattern, on time, and the ball gets out to where it should be, he's almost unstoppable.
Well, one thing they're going to have to contend with this week is that Chris Carson, one of their rookie running back at Oklahoma State, he's been playing really well. Just seeing him run against Indianapolis, you think, oh, man, this guy's going to be a problem. Oh, no, he's suffered a broken leg, so he's not going to be in there. And they're going to go to some of their other guys a little bit more now. McKissick also made a couple of plays in that Indianapolis game where you think, wow, if they get him going, he could be a problem too.
I had to look him up.
I did too.
Because
yes.
he was explosive. That touchdown run, a 20-yard sprint to the end zone where he wasn't touched.
Yeah, it was just a little outside zone. And all of a sudden, boom, he's down the field and he's there.
And then the end of the game, he catches a fade.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I have to look him up to see what he's about. And I found out that his first touch ever in the pros went 101 yards on a kick return for a touchdown. So the guy is explosive. Mm-hmm. I would bet you're going to see him more. But then I looked at height and weight. He's 190 pounds, mm-hmm. not very big. So
I'm 190 pounds.
He's not very big. So a change of pace, absolutely. A consistent tailback that's going to slam it at you 25 times, probably not.
Yeah.
I think Lacy is going to do the dirty work, be the slasher, and this guy is going to be the change of pace. So I think they're still auditioning running backs to fill that role for Marshawn Lynch, and they haven't found him yet.
I don't think they have either. Quickly, defensively, Cliff Averill likely out this week, and that may change as things go along because he suffered a stinger during that game and a tackle with Brissett. But, I mean, Frank
Scary
Clark.
Scary play, too.
Yeah. Frank Clark would step in for him on defensive end opposite Michael Bennett. And, you know, that's also a tough matchup because Frank Clark is a good guy.
I don't know if it got better or worse. Averill is a darn good pass rusher.
Absolutely, yeah.
This Frank Clark is a different animal. He's not very big, so you have the advantage. If you run at him, you can push him off the football, but he's subject to run by you at any second. Mm-hmm. I'm really looking forward to this matchup, Clark versus Whitworth.
Yeah.
This is going to be a titanic matchup of a true right end, if that's where he lines up and stays, versus a true left tackle with a passing offense. So that's going to be fun to watch. And then on the other side, or wherever he decides to line up, because I'm not even sure Seattle can control Michael Bennett. I think he just does what he wants.
Sometimes,
I'll just say Bennett versus anybody.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's going to be everywhere. So they've got some guys that can get pressure on you immediately.
All right, what's the single most important thing the Rams have to do to beat the Seahawks this week?
Don't turn the ball over.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You're going to have to work for everything you get. Richard Sherman is one of the best corners in the game. I don't care what anybody says. Ask T.Y. Hilton. He's going to lock down that side of the field. But I would say, like, Richard Sherman might be one of the guys that don't have a tremendous amount of respect for the football team, for Jared Goff, because of what he's seen and how he feels about competition in the NFC West. But when they break the huddle and Sammy Watkins trots out to his side, that's a different deal now.
It sure is.
Yeah, yeah.
That's
a completely different animal that he's going to have to deal with. So that matchup is also going to be fun. But the guy on defense that you must watch if you want to see pure perfection is Earl Thomas.
Yeah, I was going to bring him up.
He doesn't make mistakes.
He doesn't.
Not at all.
So he can play the run.
Yeah.
He can play the pass. I mean, he's so fast, so decisive, and when he comes
he's
in,
good.
He hits you.
So here's the thing. That errant pass that Jared Goff got away with that was almost picked.
Last week. Yeah.
Remember that pass? Mm-hmm. That is going to be picked with Earl Thomas.
Yeah.
So errant passes are turnovers.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the one thing I think that will kill you against teams like Seattle is takeaways and turnovers. So if you play it close to the vest, I imagine the game's going to be close and take it into the fourth quarter. We'll see what happens. But if you have a couple of turnovers, it could be Katie barred the door.
Yeah, and that's what happened with Indianapolis last week because it was tied at 18 with like 5 minutes left in the third quarter.
And then
all of a sudden, the house just caved in.
Right.
It was like a
Bobby Wagner happened.
Exactly. All right, so before we get out of here, Matt, did you look up the Mariah Carey movie?
No, he didn't.
Glitter. Music legend Mariah Carey makes her feature film debut in this love story set against the backdrop of the New York club scene. Carey plays a young singer who overcomes a turbulent childhood and begins an exciting but often volatile and precarious journey to superstardom. 2.2 out of 10 on IMDb.
Matt's got my disease.
7% on Rotten Tomatoes.
Yes,
wow.
And that is what my mom was watching when I broke my arm, and she does not like that she was watching that terrible movie, which is what she has told me before.
That almost makes sense.
Yeah, exactly.
That's what you get for watching Glitter.
Your son breaks his arm. All right, everybody, that is this week's episode of Between the Horns. Thanks so much for tuning in. For my producer, Matt, for DeMarco Farr, I'm Miles Simmons. We'll see you next week.